Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Family Matters. I'm Julie Jeezy. Judge Michelle Arantz is off again tonight. Her wonderful son, Jonas, is opening a lovely Cuban restaurant down in South Beach, and she is visiting with him. So she won't be with us tonight, but I think you're going to be pleased with the guests we have tonight, and Heather and Shelley, who are going to tell us their story of parental alienation and how they felt through that entire process, mom and daughter. It, of course, is the week before Mother's Day, which is a painful time for anybody who is an alienated mom, grandmom. And so we will talk about that in just a minute. I do want to talk about some things that are going on in Illinois right now. And Robert Ferrer is here with us. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Good evening. Hope things are well.
Good evening. Things are terrific. You know, all of the things that Illinois has publicized for nationally, Robert, are not always the best. We don't have the best economy. Everyone thinks that our politics are not quite right. But we are getting family law sort of right, aren't we?
Yeah, we're getting family law right. We're heading in that direction. There'll be bumps along the way.
There will be. But as in any legislative process, there are bumps. But right now, in fact, tomorrow, we've got a bill that's been really being worked by a lot of the groups here in Illinois, and that is Illinois House Bill 2992. Can you tell us about that bill, a brief synopsis, and update us on what the progress is and what's happening tomorrow?
Absolutely. HB 2992 is called Right of First Refusal. A right of first refusal is a guarantee that any time a parent needs someone to watch the children, they must ask the other parent first. This gives parents the opportunity to watch the children when the other parent has them. The court is given the maximum discretion in determining if right of first refusal is in the child's best interest. So how would it work? I'll give you an example. So instead of calling a babysitter, when a parent who has the children wants to go out or has to be gone for a couple of days, the parent calls the other parent first and gives them the right to refuse the children. So let's say, as an example, the mother of two little boys needs to go on a two-day business trip during the week when she has custody. Instead of calling her parents to watch the children, she must first call the boy's father and give him the right to have the 2 days with the children.
Or mother, Robert, or mother.
Right. This thing works either way. So let's say the children's with the father, and the father needs to be away for a couple of days when it's his time to have the kids. It's a two-way thing. So you're absolutely right. I'm just giving an example.
Right.
So I don't mean to imply that this is just for fathers. So basically, they agree upon at the initial hearing, you know, when they decide custody and parenting time, that they decide how much advance notice she must give the other parent, how long that parent has in replying, and also who has responsibility for transportation and things like that. So the statute itself is very broad. But it does point out what needs to be answered in order for this to work. And, of course, hopefully the judge is able to do this with the agreement and the cooperation of both parents. It's important, and especially for an audience that you have right now with this radio show, because the more a child has contact with a parent, the more difficult it is for a targeting parent to be effective in alienating the child against the targeted parent. So, and because that gives the child exposure to that parent, to the potentially targeted parent, it allows the child to see what is the truth. It gives the targeted parents an opportunity to rebut allegations or things that the targeting parent may try to instill. So it's important. The more a child has contact with both parents, the less likely there can be alienating behaviors that would be so effective that it would make the child not want to have a relationship with the targeted parent. So
Robert,
there's
a question from the chat room. If a father will not be home but is remarried, does the step-parent take over or does the other parent have first option?
It has to be, basically it's an agreement, how they decide, but generally step-parents are not part of it.
Okay.
This is because what's important is the relationship between the child and its natural parents. And the studies are very clear about the special role the natural parents play in the life of the child. And this is under most circumstances where you would have, you know, two fit parents. Some will be remarried and so forth, but the relationship has to be between the child and the natural parent. There are plenty of opportunities for the child to interact with its grandparents and with its step-parents.
And Robert, tomorrow is a vote on the Senate floor. So anybody in Illinois and anybody out of Illinois can certainly make calls to senators. It's posted on my Facebook wall. Take a look.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the numbers. They can call any senator in the state of Illinois and express their views on why this bill should be supported tomorrow. It's so important. And this is a bill for not just people in Illinois, because we could use this in other states. Right, Robert?
Actually, this will be great because I know of other states that are attempting the same thing. I know of Massachusetts, for example, has a bill pending of the same kind. It's sitting in the Judiciary Committee there in Massachusetts, but this will be a great boost for these other states in wanting, because everyone likes to see that it's already been done.
Yeah.
And we'll be the first, and it'll be a great opportunity to really give credence to the notion that it's in the child's best interest to have a meaningful relationship with both parents, which tends to be the objective of the Illinois statutes, and I'm sure of most other statutes around the country.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, Robert. Thank you so much for the legislative update from Illinois. And anybody that's listening, it's important to be a part of the legislative process, because that's how we make changes. And
Absolutely. Legislators
are there at your beck and call. You've elected them. They're there to serve you. They're guys and gals just like we are. Grew up with one, know how they are, and they just want to hear from you, and they can't do what they don't understand or don't know is important to you unless you tell them. So please make a point to contact your legislators, and especially in Illinois tomorrow, if you're in Illinois listening, call and press this point on Illinois HB 2992. Robert, thank
exactly.
you. I want to get to our guest today, and you
For
have been
sure.
terrific, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. It was nice talking with
okay.
you. Okay. Have
Bye-bye.
A good evening.
Well, okay. I'm excited about this show. I've been excited about this show all week. And I want to tell you, because it's Mother's Day, this is an especially meaningful and poignant show to me. I went to a graduation this last Saturday of one of my children. And they weren't there. And I have to tell you that it was heartbreaking. I don't even know if there are other words to describe the way that I felt when I sat in that auditorium and read his name in the program, but they didn't read his name when the college graduates were walking across the stage. It is not a good feeling. So to know that there are relationships out there like that of Heather, our guest today, and her mother, Shelley, that have been reunified, that have been put back together through this process, is something that every alienated parent hangs on to, and grandparent hangs on to, every minute, every second, every millisecond of every day, that your children are going to come home to you. Heather came home. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm actually pretty good.
I am so glad. And Heather and your mom, Shelley, is with us. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Jill. I'm here, too.
I'm so glad. I'm sorry the Skype thing didn't work out for us today, but we've got you here, and I hope you're good, and you can hear me, and I can hear you, and everybody can hear you, which is so important because you speak volumes. Heather, I've told you on Facebook in private messaging that you are a rare jewel. You are somebody that we all want to hear from because the hope that you give us is priceless. So I want to talk about, you know, every alienation case is very, very similar. And I know you both know that because you've been in this world for a while. So I don't want to get into, you know, little specifics about your case, but Heather is going to have a very specific set of feelings that she's going to relate, the feelings of the child, which are so complex, love, anger, hate, conflict, and then the peace, Heather, that you found with your horses for just that moment in time that you could be there with your horses. And I have horses, so I know that feeling, how intensely personal and quiet that can be with that animal. So I want to explore those feelings that you had. And then, Shelley, your feelings of being the alienated parent, which I know so well, of a broken heart and walking through life very stoic, but cautiously hopeful that someday you will see your child again. So maybe, Shelley, let's start with you. And why don't you tell me how the process began for you with alienation?
Well, the process for us began on September 6, 2006, when in a court hearing, the presiding judge awarded primary custody of Heather to her father. It was completely unexpected. There were a lot of other circumstances that occurred in that hearing that I don't think we need to get into right now unless someone really wants to know. But the long and the short of it is that the alienation tactics began almost immediately, and the contact was very restricted almost immediately in terms of phoning and being able to see her. Homework was interrupted and disrupted, and within a very short order of time, we were dealing with access interference, and Heather was beginning to show signs that she wasn't very happy to be around me and her siblings and her extended family any longer. And so it became quite a long, drawn-out saga, as I know you know, Jill. And we persevered, but not without walking into a few potholes and tripping over our toes until I figured out, with the help of some professionals, that one in particular who worked very hard with me and my family, to figure out how we could support Heather through this time, because it was clear that the system was not. And so there we are.
Shelley, what were the signs for you? And you know, I know what they were, but if we have people listening who don't really understand the experience of parental alienation, what did you see in Heather that led you to believe that things were changing drastically in her and that you felt her pulling away from you?
Well, we'd had a very, very close bond before all of this began. It was very appropriate, you know, that there was no inappropriate contact between us in terms of what we talked about and the things that we did as a mother and daughter. But we were very, very close, and suddenly Heather was withdrawn. She would come to me for her weekends with us and not speak. She barely slept. She didn't eat. She was unhappy, sullen. At times she was rude and disrespectful. and some of this, I know people will say, well, most preteens and teens can be that way, and they're right. But I'd raised several children, two of my own and four of belonging to Heather's father from his first two marriages, helped raise those and through their teen years, and I understood what normal teen behavior was like, and this was not normal. She began to avoid talking to us about anything that was going, you know, that she was feeling or things that were happening with her at school. And we later learned what those reasons, you know, what the reasons were behind that. She wasn't allowed to bring friends to our home, and which was very unsettling for her and puzzling for us.
She wasn't allowed by her father to bring friends to your home, or their parents, the friends' parents didn't allow them to come. Which was it?
I think it was both. So Heather wants to interject here.
Okay, well, Heather, go ahead.
With my dad, he would argue, he would say that I wasn't allowed to bring friends over because, one, he would find out, and then I would be in trouble. And he said that if I took any friends out to the farm, they would be dangerous, and that my mom would talk to them and make their parents feel awkward, and then they would get mad at him.
But there was never, Heather, was there anything specific that he said to you other than that? Did he tell you what your mom might have said to your friends?
No, he just was mainly afraid of her talking to them at all. It was very odd. We've had family friends that have actually turned on my mom, and they didn't want to speak to her anymore because of my dad getting to them. It was very puzzling and bewildering that he can manipulate so many people to turn against her.
Mm-hmm.
On one occasion, Jill, I had arranged for Heather to go to a college ballet performance just before Christmas time with me on one of our Thursday evenings that we had. And I was always looking for special things that we could do that I thought would be kind of interesting rather than just schlep off to a mall and you know, muck around.
Mm-hmm.
So I had asked the mother of one of her friends if she would like to join us, the mother and the daughter, for this performance. And this was through email, and she declined. But when she declined, I noticed that the IP address where she had sent her response declining was the same IP address as Heather's dad's computer. And I thought that was very interesting. It wasn't the same IP address from her own computer because we had previous email contact. So I knew that there was a connection. I knew that there was some collusion with this going on, and it just made it difficult for Heather. It was one more thing that kind of isolated her, and I think the message was, you're not to have fun at your mom's.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what you both are pointing out is sometimes people don't understand that the children are not the only people that turn against you. It is that whole group of people that you were affiliated or associated with when you were married to that person, almost to the man and woman, will turn completely against you because this person has such great manipulative and controlling power over anybody that they come in contact with. And you know, Heather, I mean, the truth is your dad didn't want your friends out there because they would see that your mother didn't have horns and a tail.
Exactly.
And so by walling you off, that kept you as a possession that he could easily control.
I think the isolation was one of the most striking pieces to this because the isolation was so complete. I remember Heather's older sister, my older daughter from my first marriage, bumping into Heather and her dad and her stepmother in a movie theater. She was relating the story to me afterwards and telling me how happy she was to see Heather because she hadn't seen Heather for so long. And they hugged, the girls hugged each other, but it was very clear from dad and stepmom's body language that this was very unwelcome.
Yeah.
And and so the contact was very brief.
And Heather, do you have other siblings other than this sister?
Yeah, I have an older brother and from my mom's previous marriage, and I also have two stepsisters.
And how is your relationship with your siblings now?
It's significantly improved. I don't feel really awkward talking around them anymore. Before, I was just told that I couldn't have any contact with them, that the Kent side of my family is the family only family that I should have.
Mm-hmm. And Shelley, your parents, were they still living? Are they still living at this point?
Yes, they are. They live about 20 minutes from my farm, and we've had a very close relationship, you know, throughout Heather's life. They are Heather's only living grandparents, and I think for both her grandmother and grandfather, they both shared very special things in common with Heather. So this was a relationship that Heather was denied for those years, and they were denied as well. It was a very difficult journey for them too.
And I think it's really difficult. I don't know how old your parents are, but mine are 78 and 74. And it was difficult at the onset of this to try to explain to them after having an incredibly close, almost overly close relationship, because we were together all the time with my parents and as a family unit, very small family. But it's hard to explain to someone of that generation why this happens and what is happening. So today, that breaks my heart, is that my parents are getting elderly and they, you know, don't have a relationship with my children. Heather, did other people during this process, were there people outside who tried to speak to you about this situation, knowing your mom, knowing she was a good person? Was there anybody that stepped in to say anything to you?
Outside of my family, not exactly. I did have a psychologist I talked to throughout most of this experience, and she had tried to be very supportive, but I was so manipulated by my dad that I everything that she knew about my mom was stuff that I had told her, well, that my dad had told me to tell her. And
mm-hmm.
So she had a very low opinion of my mom, as did most of the people in our situation. I think that beforehand, like, my stepsisters tried to talk to me and say, like, well, you know, your mom's really worried about you here. You know, she shouldn't be too hard on her. I think that you're being told a lot of lies, and wasn't really listening to them. I thought that they were just told by my mom to, hey, tell Heather this so that she'll hang out with me more. So
So you just dismissed what they were saying. But when you were talking to the psychologist, when you were saying the things that you were parroting that your dad had said to you about your mom, how were you feeling? What was really in your head when you were saying those things that you knew internally and in your heart weren't true? How were you feeling at that moment, being so conflicted about what you were saying, knowing the truth?
It was really hard because deep down I knew that, well, there's something wrong with this situation, and that a lot of the things that I was being told didn't really add up. But
mm-hmm.
for me, I think that there's a lot, in my situation in particular, there was a lot of issues with loyalty. Since my parents were separated, I felt like I had to be loyal to one parent or the other. And since my dad was telling me all these mean things about my mom, I felt like I had to be loyal to him in a way, and so I would do what he wanted me to do. So I used to think, well, this would make him proud.
Mm-hmm.
This will get his approval.
Okay. So when we talk about kids that are alienated in the mental health profession, all of the experts will tell you when you listen to them that your kids really love you through this process. Even children who are burnt with cigarettes or made to drink Lysol or, you know, whatever a physical abuse they suffer, still want to be with the parent that's doing this to them. So mental health professionals in the parental alienation field will say that these children that are being alienated still love you deep down. It's still in there. How did you really feel about your mom? Did you just feel confusion, or was there something in you that said, I love my mom and I want to see her? And I'm only asking you this because everybody wants to know, all alienated parents want to know, what is deep down inside in that dark secret place that you have to hide away that you can't talk to that alienator about?
I think it's instinctual for every kid to love both parents equally. I don't think that, you know, it's not like there's just a void there that all of a sudden, poof, you know, like everything is just for one parent and possibly a step parent, and there's nothing left for the natural parent. I think that deep down, every child knows, like, yeah, this is my mom, this is my dad, I love them to bits, I wouldn't be here if they, you know, if they didn't come together. And sometimes they push that so far down because they're so focused on everything that's all the lies that they're being told, that all they see is all these negative things. But I think that if they went through a revelation and they say, well, you know, maybe these things I think aren't right really are parental alienation. If they are informed, then they will connect the dots themselves and realize, oh, my God, what am I doing? I'm going to lose my mom or my dad. I need to fix this.
Okay. I'm going to grab a call here from Pennsylvania. This is Cindy from Pennsylvania. Cindy, do you have a question for Heather or Shelley?
Can you hear me, Jill?
Yes, I can.
Oh, my gosh, because I was hollering at my dog earlier. So
okay. Well, what's your question for Shelley or for Heather?
Heather, you know, I think Jill pretty much said it already, but I could probably have two questions. You know, like with Mother's Day coming up or special events like, the rejected parent's birthday or whatever, do alienated children think of that other parent at all during those times? Or do they just suppress that as well?
They do think about it. I thought of my mom on Mother's Day and on Christmas and any other holidays I didn't spend for, especially her birthday. She's actually, her birthday is November 9th and mine's November 15th, so we're quite close in that way. But I have to suppress a lot of it. Like, it's not like I could be like, hey, Dad, can I call my mom and say a happy birthday or Merry Christmas? Because I always assumed that it would mean that I was going to get yelled at and that, you know, this isn't what I'm supposed to do. But yeah, I thought about my mom, but I always had to maintain that mask in front of my dad so he wouldn't get mad at me for another reason.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, Dr. Childress, has a lot of information on his website, and I had shared an email with him, and he had said, you know, that children, because they can't love that other parent, blanket their pain with hatred. So, you know, it's easier sometimes to hate when you're in pain than it is to, you know, really realize, you know, how much hurt you're feeling. So can you relate to that as well?
I could. I know that there was a lot of times I would lash out at my mom, and I blamed her for a couple things because I was very informed with everything that was going on in court. I was obviously and shown court documents and all that, so I knew what was going on. And I used to get mad because my mom, she would bring up things, like, it's not like there were things I told her, okay, please don't talk about, but they were, the fact that she would mention them and that I was getting yelled at them about it, it made me quite resentful because I figured, well, this is the reason I'm being yelled at, is because you brought this up. And I would just get, instead of talking it out, I would just get very resentful and snap at my mom or just treat her disrespectfully.
I think that Heather raises a really interesting part of the struggles that my husband and I were going through the system at that time, because I can think of some of the examples that Heather's describing, and they were in response to allegations being made. So we were really in a defensive mode at that time, and I think a lot of target parents often find themselves in that place. And when we shifted in December of 2009, it shifted in that court hearing that we had from being defensive and trying to deal with these senseless, baseless allegations that made no sense and were just making life more miserable for Heather. And we shifted to a focus of what can we do to make this situation more stable for her. And it was at that time that we requested that a parenting coordinator be appointed to the file. We proposed an equitable shared parenting schedule and had some thoughts in terms of how Heather and I would stay in the city together during her school days when she was in my care. And the judge at that point, for the first time, really turned that around. And it was something that Heather wasn't being put in the middle of our documentation to the court. Not to say that she wasn't still under an awful lot of pressure, because I think that was still there, and she can speak to that more than I can. But our focus was shifted, and the judge noticed that.
There's a question. Cindy, did that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Of course, Cindy Corsi from Pennsylvania. She is just an amazing, amazing advocate working in education for parental alienation and heading up the chapter there of PAO USA. And I'm really proud of what she's doing. So thank you, Cindy. I wanted to ask you, Heather, of course, we need to talk about your YouTube posting that you made. Your video is absolutely incredible, and I mean it is a sensation in the parental alienation world as far as Facebook goes and all of the views that it's had, and it is an incredible story, and you did a great job. You're a great videographer. So I wanted to ask you, you know, your horses were very, very important to you. And there was a point in, and Shelley, you can probably address this first. There was a point in the parental alienation story that after your mom had been removed from your life, then your dog, one of your prized possessions was taken from you as well. Do you want to address that first, and then your mom can sort of add whatever she needs to add?
Well, it was really hard. I had a golden retriever. His name was Zane. He was a real sweetheart, kind of hyper and crazy. And I remember that my dad offered to buy him
I offered to buy him.
Well, my mom offered to buy him. Initially, my dad bought him after I had written an email to my mom, basically just saying I didn't want anything to do with her. And then all of a sudden, my dad wanted to get rid of him. And it was a bit hard because he was such a hyper dog, and I used to use him as a bit of an excuse in a way to get out of the house. I would. He was such a strong dog that you couldn't walk him. You actually needed to run him with a bike. So he'd be dragging through snowdrifts and all that. It was pretty interesting. But I used to enjoy using that as an escape from my dad. I used to always love physical activity and exercise as just an outlet to clear my head and think and just feel semi-normal. I always wanted to just feel like a normal kid in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt every time I was in my dad's house that if I looked at him funny, I was going to get pounced on and then to get to a three-hour lecture.
Yeah. When he got rid of the dog, did you feel like the horse would be next? Because it seems like he was systematically eradicating things from your life that connected you to the outside world. So how did you – were you afraid that would be the next thing?
I didn't think he would take the horses out. I thought he was going to take my mom out before he took the horses. He briefly took me out of my lease rides I had at a stables close by mm-hmm. his house. He claimed that he couldn't afford them because of the court battle
uh-huh.
going on, and then I was re-enrolled in them about a year later. I'm still not quite sure the reasons why, but I was definitely more concerned with my mom because I think my dad, initially the lease rides started with me and my mom. It was a tradition that we did in a way every Thursday sorry, Thursday, Friday night, we would, my dad would give her me to my mom's care, and we would go and ride.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad, he insisted that these rides be taken out, and he enrolled me in Tuesday during his time, and he would take me. So I think he just saw that as another way, hobby that he could take over.
Heather, how did you feel when relationships that were so important to you were being dismissed? And as you matured, did it make a difference to you that such important things weren't in your life anymore? And did you ever think, how am I going to have a meaningful relationship going forward if the most important relationships to me right now in my life are being erased?
It was really a bit of a struggle. In order to kind of combat for all the relationships and things that are being taken out of my life, I enjoyed my solitude. Like my mom said, I would come here and I wouldn't talk, I wouldn't eat. I wanted to be alone in my room just to process things. I very much enjoyed being left alone or being left with my horses because it's the only place where I really could think and not have to worry about if I showed a different facial expression or if I needed to hide or if I had to worry about being yelled at or anything like that. I think that it just would have been difficult if I was very upfront with my dad and tried to fight for these relationships and all that.
Well, and what event was it that you think specifically triggered that the recognition that you had been manipulated into rejecting your mom? Was there something that you can pinpoint?
It was definitely, in my video I'd explained it to my mom. She came to my school and she wanted a meeting with my English teacher to discuss my failing grades. And I had been told by my dad since I started grade 7 that if my mom ever came to the school that I was to keep away from her. And I was to run away. So when I saw my mom, I ran. I did as I was told. And the look on my mom, it still haunts me to this day that I did that. And after a while, I slowed down and she caught up to me. And I just, she was
really upset. You know, she was a little defensive, but I expected that. I by this time, this was 2011, beginning of 2011. She was in grade 11, and I had I'd been immersed in parental alienation information for about 3.5 years at that point. And so I just knew that this wasn't really her. This wasn't my daughter that was running away. This was something else was causing her to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So when
right.
I caught up to her, I hugged her. I told her I loved her. I told her I'd see her later, which was true. I was supposed to have her later that day and left. But it was a very hollow feeling. I think it was one of the lowest points that we had.
Well, I don't think there is an alienated parent who hasn't had that experience. I mean, as I'm sitting here, I'm remembering going to the park that's just a block from my house when my daughter was a senior in high school, and all of these kids that had grown up virtually at my house were with her, and they were having some fundraiser in the park, and she saw me and just took off running as fast as she could, and they all kind of looked at me and looked at her like, "What is wrong with you?" And it just didn't make any sense to anyone. But what you just said, Heather, perfectly explains. I mean, it had been pounded into you to run when you saw your mother.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to grab a call. I have a call right here. Let's pick this up. Hello. What's your name? 661
Sorry.
Area code. Hi.
Oh, no, it's Chris. Chris
Hi,
Jones.
Hi, Chris. Chris Jones from Alberta. Do you have a question for Shelley or Heather?
Well, I just want to thank Heather and Shelley for especially Heather for putting that that production on Facebook. It was as a dad, it's very difficult to listen to. So I guess I'm just weighing in on that. And, of course, I know Shelley from way back. And I guess, you know, I just, I just am really sorry that she got, that Heather got caught in the crossfire. And it just reinforces that, you know, this whole thing is just terrible, just terrible. But I'm glad to hear, what I wanted to get out of Shelley perhaps is what happened with the judge that turned things around. I'm sort of called in just as you were talking about that, so I don't know if I got it all. But after that, what were the other events that have taken place that you feel, because we have this problem with judges, with court-appointed therapists, psychologists, that they're really not dealing with this problem.
Exactly. Thank you, Chris. And I do remember Chris, and especially because my husband's name is also Chris Jones, so I have two email addresses. I have to be really careful when I'm writing to my honey that I don't hit the wrong Chris Jones.
So if you get a love letter, Chris, it wasn't meant for you.
Got it.
Chris, I'm going to let Shelley answer, and I appreciate you calling. Thank you.
Yeah.
So essentially what had happened was that in January of 2010, the case management judge here who had been on our file this whole time had ordered that we a number of things, but had stopped short of an order for a parenting coordinator, which was what I had asked for in the December 2009 hearing. She liked my proposal for an equitable shared schedule. I believe that the time frame was 60-40. I stepped back from 50-50 because I felt that if Heather's father was really hung up on equal time, then he could have a little more time. That was fine. I just wanted to have enough time for Heather to have some time for Heather to be with me so that she would have both parents in her life. And the judge liked this a lot. She liked the idea of a parenting coordinator because our communication was so poor. And as I described in my affidavit and my motion, I felt that this was a key piece to help Heather by having her parents work more cooperatively together. So she recommended a parenting coordinator. She actually named the coordinator and a psychologist here in Edmonton, and we began working with her. Long story short, this judge then went on a sabbatical, a one-year sabbatical in May of 2010, and when the parenting coordinator process ended very abruptly at the end of August that year, when Heather's father fired her, there was, first of all, there was no recourse for me. This had been a recommendation within the order, not an actual order, and the parenting coordinator had no ability to even file a report with the court. It took 7 months to get back into court to deal with this piece and other access denials that have been going on. And by then, we were in front of a different judge who did not know our case, had never seen us before, and simply ruled that Heather's wishes, as stated by her guardian ad litem, her child advocate judge, or sorry, lawyer, according to Heather's emails, were to be respected. And so that was the end of it. That was the last time I was in court with this.
Heather, those emails that your mom's referring to, you didn't write those, did you?
I did write them, but I had my dad looking over my shoulder.
Right, that's what I meant. I mean, you were typing them, but they weren't what you meant to say. I mean, you were being told exactly what to write. I think that's important to know. When emails come from kids, there's generally somebody looking over their shoulder. If you get a Facebook message, if you're still having contact with your kids, they're not writing that on their own. So, and generally, I mean, probably, Shelley, wasn't most of the language in Heather's emails pretty whatever your husband, your ex-husband was, you know, his language? Was it his verbiage most of the time?
Absolutely. There were phrases that I knew that he would say. He's originally from England,
mm-hmm.
and so they have certain words and phrases that they use to describe certain things, and I knew those weren't Heather's. Those were his.
I'm going to grab another call here from Chicago. I believe this is Mick. Is that Mick?
Yeah, you got me correct.
Hi, Mick. You have a question for Shelley or Heather?
Hi. Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say, Heather, yeah, excellent job on the YouTube video. I'm glad that you did. I went to watch it, and, you know, so many feelings come over that, and so accurate. But my question has to do is, as an alienated parent, is lots of times a child, when you see the child, the alienated child will sit there and accuse the alienated parent of something that they did or didn't do. I'm always confused as to how to react to that. Like, if, let's say my child says, Dad, Mom said that you did this. And I'm always confused as to, should I deny it? You know, from the child's point of view, should I be denying it and defending myself, or should I just let it ride and let the child maybe believe that that actually did occur?
I wouldn't suggest letting the child believe it, because for one example, with the lies that my dad told me about my mom, he told me that my mom had actually had something like 10 affairs or something like that during their relationship, and he told me that she didn't love me and that she thought that going into the city to spend time with me was a hassle. And I think I did once ask my mom about the affairs and about if she thought that I was a hassle to come into the city on. I think that my mom, she was very calm, but she did defend herself. She didn't, get very overly emotional. She was just, told me, no, that's not the truth. You know, I would never do that and stuff like that. And it was just very interesting.
Well, I think from my perspective, when Heather was asking questions, and that I could only have been coached to her, you know, by other people, by her father and her stepmother specifically, I tried very hard to stay calm, take a deep breath, and if it was true, then if there was a kernel of what she said that was true, then I would deal with that and
own up to it. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And owning up, I'll finish this thread, and then there was something else I wanted to say as well. And so if it wasn't true, then I would just say, that's not true. And, you know, I'm happy to discuss this with you further if you'd like to talk about it more. But if she didn't want to talk about it, and sometimes she didn't, then we let it go. And that was the end of it. And because I felt, and it came to be that it was the case, that over time, if it was bothering her, she would bring it up, and then she was ready to hear what I had to say.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. In fact, I've sort of gotten to that point. But one thing that's always bothered me is, in my case, I had a guardian ad litem who told me I was not allowed to defend myself, and then just told me, you know, it really sucks you can't defend yourself, doesn't it? And that always bothered me. I'm just happy that I'm to the point where, if my daughter says something, I'm like, well, okay, she can say anything she wants. My daughter accepts that.
Mick, hang in there. Thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. That is so important, what you just said, Heather. You know, for you, I always tell people when I talk to parents, you know, it's from this day forward, and I think, Shelley, you'll echo that. You can't have them walk back in your door and then immediately start defending yourself or immediately start asking questions as to why they did what they did. I think it has to be in your time, in the child's time, and if they want to know it, then you answer it, and you answer as honestly as you possibly can.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And there were many situations and many issues that came up over those years that Heather didn't want to really talk about, but it was bugging her enough to ask the question. And then later on, as she matured and I think was more emotionally able
to
manage, started more to think for herself, then she was ready to hear more about what I had to say about that. And then it was okay. We could talk about this. There was one more thing that I wanted to also say about when I was, the conversations that I had with Heather during that period of time. When I began working with my therapist in 2009, I think it was, one of the things that I learned from her and was compelled to do because of the things that she was teaching me was to apologize to Heather for the turmoil that was going on in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And for my part in creating that. And I know that for some target parents, they may be thinking, well, I'm not really creating this turmoil. I'm just a victim just like my child. And I believe that to some degree that's very much the case. But when you look at it from your child's perspective, your child is only looking at it from their point of view, and they really are the victim here. They are the helpless one. They have absolutely no choice in what's going on. And I remember the first time I told Heather that I was so sorry for all of the turmoil that had been caused and how her teenage years really were upside down. And she looked at me. We were driving, and she looked at me and had tears in her eyes, and she said, "That's the first time someone's ever said that to me."
Oh, that's great. I think it's incredibly important, Shelley, what you just said. Again, I mean, you're making points here that every alienated parent should be listening to. You have to own up to your part of what happened. And by taking responsibility and asking for forgiveness and saying you're sorry for that, or get at least having the opportunity to do that, I mean, we would all love that opportunity. And what you did is a huge step in her coming back to you with trust. And being able to talk to you about what happened to her, because truly the child is the victim.
Exactly.
Heather, the YouTube video, of course, everyone's bringing that up. I mean, we talked about it briefly, but what led you to do that YouTube video and give you the confidence to put it all out there? Has your dad seen it?
I don't think he's seen it, because he would have probably sent me an email. But it was for the Bubbles of Love Day. Unfortunately, I have a love-hate relationship with my computer, so it would crash, and I'd be like, oh, God, I had so much progress, and it's all gone. I'd get frustrated, I'd leave it for a couple weeks, and then I go back to it. My dad still tries to email me. Before, I was emailing back, but I realized that the contact with him was just, it was all negative, and it's just what he wanted. That's what he lives for.
Mm-hmm.
He loves to fight, even if it's with me. I was so frustrated and sick of it, and I knew that I needed to relay my story somehow, because a lot of the parents, I don't think they quite understand the child's perspective, because from the target parent's perspective, they all think that their children hate them, and that's not the truth. We're being puppeted to hate them. It's not really how we feel.
Well, I think you are a walking testament, and everybody wants to hear, as I told you, what you have to say, because we don't know. And it's so rare that we can hear. I mean, there have only been a few people. Sonia, Pinero is one who is wonderful, from Wisconsin. Addie Dader from Indiana, another great one, who did a wonderful video at her high school. I mean, there's just a few kids that I can think of that have ever been brave enough to come out and actually speak out and not suffer the consequences of that alienating parent coming back and really giving them the what for. So my next question was, do you have contact with your dad? But you've cut everything off for now.
For me, I don't try to email my dad. The thing I really want to relay is that I do love my dad, and if he tried to reach out to me and he put everything behind and he just let go of his ego and all of it and of the past, and just said, you know what, yours and my relationship is more important than the past. You know, I am so sorry. I must have went wrong somewhere, because he'll never own up to the fact that he's an alienated parent.
Mm-hmm.
I love my dad, and if he did that, I probably would say, you know, all right, well, let's give it a shot. I'd be guarded at first, but I love my dad. I don't love his actions. I don't love the way he treated me. And I don't regret leaving him for that.
Mm-hmm. What advice, Heather, would you give to parents who are out there right now hurting and waiting and hoping that their children are coming home? And on this week of Mother's Day, this Sunday, that if in any other year that you would not come back, your mother would be sitting there having the same Mother's Day I'm having, wanting, waiting, hoping. What would you say to all of us that are looking for our children to come home? And what advice would you give as to how we should approach these kids right now?
I would just tell them to hang in there. I don't think it's ever worth it to try to give up on your kids, as much as it seems like it would be the easiest thing to do. I don't think it is, because one day your kid's going to realize that this is wrong. I don't think that every child feels this way, and they do eventually see through the alienating parents' plans. And the best thing I can do is for them to talk to them, explain, you know, I love you very much, you know, but they always, from what I experienced, I was really concerned that all my mom wanted to do was fight. And when at one time, the last court to issue, we actually went to lunch, which is something that I was told I wasn't supposed to do. But anyways, my mom told me that she loved me and that if that was what I wanted, then she'd respect my decision because she didn't want me to be caught in the conflict anymore. And I think that that really made an impact on me, because I've been told all these times by my dad that, oh, your mother, she just loves the fight, you know, she just wants to fight and all that. And then here I am, I'm hearing from my own mom saying, no, I don't want to fight. I want what's best for you. And that really made an impact on me, because it just enforced even more that my dad was lying.
Heather, what if this had not resolved with your mom? What would you be doing right now? Where do you feel you would have been?
I probably would have still been stuck with my dad. I probably would have never gotten engaged to my fiance because my dad didn't approve of our relationship. I feel like I would have lived a very controlled life. I probably would have been quite miserable. I don't think I would have even had contact with my mom anymore, because he was so bent on getting us pushed away from each other.
Shelley, have you made up for lost time?
I think we have.
Can you not ever do that? I mean, I think that would be a difficult thing, but
yeah, I was about to say I think we have, but you know, now the wheels are turning in my head, and because a lot of parents have asked me that or have made comments about all this time that they're losing, and when I look back over these years in Heather's life where I didn't know that she had done so well in that track meet, I didn't know that she was called Horse Girl. There were things I learned in her video along with everyone else. And I feel badly for all of that time, but I cannot focus on what I've lost. I can only focus on what I have now and what we can continue to build on tomorrow. And so I try not to focus on the past. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's how I stay sane, and it's how I keep from feeling bitter or angry.
I think that's great. I think you two should get together and make a YouTube video about the process, how you both felt, and then the coming together. And then what happens, which is so important, and if it could get into the hands of alienators, what happens? We have blowback, meaning you now, Heather, have no contact with your dad. And if they knew that was going to happen, maybe they would think about it a little differently. You would hope. You would hope. But I wish you guys would think about that. And then also Cindy asked the question, Heather, would you ever consider making a YouTube that speaks specifically to teachers, counselors, and other alienated children?
I would definitely consider doing that. I've also been considering making a thank you video and a frequently asked questions video, because I do get a lot of questions. A lot of parents reach out to me through my Facebook account and ask me questions, especially if I were to contact their children, to which I tell them no, because from my experience, I just think that it would be more negative than positive for them.
Yeah.
But me and my mom, we've also considered making a book, actually, where we would individually write different chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And out of our experiences, my mom is a bit more knowledgeable in dates and all that. To be honest with the situation, and the best way that I've been able to cope is to, most of my memories of the things are a little bit fuzzy, because I find that I don't want to live in the past. I don't want to live in that time. So I focus more on the future and trying to help everyone than.
Well, this has been an amazing show. We have about 48 seconds left, and I hate that, because I could talk to you for a long time, Heather and Shelley. Thank you both. It's been incredible. And on this week of Mother's Day, Heather, what can you say to all the alienated moms out there? Let's just talk to moms right now, and then we'll have you back on Father's Day.
Well, on behalf of all this, I would just like to tell everyone, you know, happy Mother's Day on behalf of your children, because I don't know if they will be able, strong enough to tell you, but I know deep down that they want to.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you for that. That was amazing. Not very many people make me cry on this show, Heather, and I'm going to write you a message after this. Thank you so much for being here, both of you. And let's stay in touch, because I think we should coordinate some of this stuff, because you have some valuable information to disseminate. Shelley, you're wonderful as well, and you are right on the mark with what you're telling all alienated parents. So you two hang in there. Love you both. And we'll talk soon, okay?
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day, Shelley.
And you too, Jill.
All
you
right.
Too.
Bye-bye. Have a good week.
You too.
Bye.
This has been Family Matters. Thank you all for listening. What a great show. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.